where his scar met his lips, a faint smile. I think we could let them sleep, at least for a few more hours. And then, we'll hit the road. 2 hours rolled right on by around us. We both must have fallen asleep at some point, because by the time I opened my eyes, the condensation was shrinking against the glass, and a few rays of morning light had made it to the forest floor. As I stirred, so did Liam. For a while, we said and did nothing beyond working out the cricks and kinks from the awkward positions we slept in. When it came time to finally let go of his hand, I felt the first touch of cold air work its way in from outside. "Wake up, team," he said. His shoulder popped as he reached back to slap Chubb's knee. "Time to carpe the hell out of this diem." Less than an hour later, we were standing in front of the black minivan, watching as Zoo did one last check under the seats. I buttoned my plaid shirt up to my throat and wrapped a red scarf I'd picked up around my neck 3 times, not because I was all that cold, but because it helped hide the disturbing bloodstain smeared down my front. "Yikes." Liam's expression was grim as he leaned over and pulled my hair out from where it was trapped beneath the collar. "Would you rather wear mine?" I smiled and zipped his coat up for him. My forehead was still tender to the touch, and the stitches were as ugly as sin, but I was feeling better. "Was it really that bad?"
"Evil Dead too bad."
Liam bent down to add a few of his clothes to my backpack. Something red appeared in his hand.
"Just about gave me a heart attack, Green."
"You can't really call her Green anymore," Chubbs pointed out. He was making the difficult decision about which books to abandon and which to take with him, and had seemed to settle on Watership Down, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, and some book I had never heard of called Howard's End, Left Behind, The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, and The Sound and the Fury, which Chubbs had taken to calling The Snore and the Just Kill Me.
"Yeah," I said, "no more Green."
"All done?"
Liam called to Zoo. When she gave him a thumbs up, he threw her pink bag over one shoulder and my backpack over the other.
"Any day now, Marion Librarian? I thought you were the one that wanted to check out."
Chubbs gave him the finger, leaning forward to put his full weight into closing the briefcase. I leaned over to help him, trying to avoid the look on Liam's face as he stood there staring at Betty's mangled black shell. Zoo was crying without making a sound. Liam had his hands on her shoulders, holding her steady. Even Chubbs looked at the car with a rare softness, his fingers bunching up the fabric of his pants. I understood why we were parting ways with Betty now. The other skip tracer that had been with Lady Jane was still out there, and there was some chance that the woman had reported the car to whatever bounty network the skip tracers used. But I also understood why Liam had been so reluctant to do it. Unlike the abandoned and withered small towns we had driven through in western Virginia, the nearby cities and their populations were still holding on, which meant there would be more folks on the road, and Betty, with her bullet holes and cracked windows, was not exactly inconspicuous. Then there was the fact that we had little to no gas left, and no easy way of finding more, aside from going up and down and siphoning it from the abandoned cars along the nearby highway. There was too much traffic, too many potential eyes, running down the road to do it. Liam had gotten us as close as he could to Lake Prince, but it was anyone's guess how long it would take us to walk there.
"It feels like we should do something," he said, "like send her off on a barge out to sea and set her on fire. Let her go out in a blaze of glory."
Chubbs raised an eyebrow.
"It's a minivan, not a Viking."
Zoo pulled away from his grasp and headed for the trees to her left. Liam rubbed the back of his neck, at a loss.
"Hey," he started, "it's okay, we'll..."
But when Zoo reappeared in our line of sight, she wasn't empty-handed. Clutched between her fingers were 4 small yellow flowers, wild weeds by the look of it, the kind we always used to have to pull up in Thurman's garden every spring. She walked over to the van, stood on her toes, and lifted up the closest windshield wiper. With delicate fingers, she positioned each flower in a row, keeping them straight across the cracked glass. Something cold and wet caught on my eyelashes. Not tears, but a misty rain, the kind that soaked through you slow and sure, driving you crazy with chills in the process. And I realized then how unfair it all was that we couldn't just crawl back inside of the car, that even if we made it to East River, we'd be soaked and sore for days. This car, this had been a safe place for them, for us. Now we had lost that, too. I shoved my hands in my pockets and turned away, heading for the trees. My fingers brushed against something hard and smooth in my pocket, and I didn't need to pull it out to know that it was the panic button. In the beginning, I had kept it because I wasn't sure I'd be able to protect them on my own. And now, I had half a mind to drop it and let the ground claim it. Liam had confirmed everything that I'd suspected, but it seemed foolish to toss it then, when there was a chance for us to use them like they would have used us. If a PSF or skip tracer caught up to us now, I could press the button, and the agents that showed up would be more than enough distraction for us to have a chance to get away. But it still didn't make me feel any less ashamed of how relieved I felt to find it still there, to know that Kate, with all of her promises to take care of things, was still out there, still only a touch away. Liam thought the easiest and fastest way to navigate our small pack to East River was to travel alongside the roads that we would have taken had we still been in Betty. We were close enough to the highway to hear the occasional car whiz by, or see the flash of some long, silver-bellied semi-truck out of the corner of our eyes, but, he assured us, out of their line of sight. This was the way he had traveled after escaping the League, how he had navigated through most of Virginia, how he hoped to get home. We were debating whether or not Chubbs had broken his toe against an exposed tree root when the wail of a truck's horn shattered the silence. The booms that came next were infinitely worse, the thundering of something heavy falling and the resounding crack of metal snapping. We all jumped. I dropped Zoo's hand to cover my ears. The way the tires squealed just before the crash came was like the warning signal for white noise. Liam reached over and gently pried my hands from my ears. Come with me for a second. He turned back to the others. You guys, watch the bags. Before the sound had even settled in the air, we heard the screams. Not the desperate kind, the one you'd hear when someone was terrified or hurt or even out of their head with grief. This was a war cry, a rising rebel yell. After that, there was no chance of Zoo or Chubbs coming with us. They stayed behind to watch the bags as Liam and I made our way to the line of trees that separated us from the rain-soaked asphalt of the highway. The semi-truck was on its side in the middle of the road, as if it had been flung there like a toy. The smell of burned rubber and smoke curled my stomach as we crouched down, and I was concerned the trail of sparks in front of us would turn into a wall of flame. Liam stood up and was nearly at the shoulder of the road before my hand managed to catch his elbow. What are you doing? I had to shout over the sound of the rain pinging against the silver, rippled body of the trailer the truck had been hauling. The driver needed help. Yes, I knew that, and maybe it made me soulless and horrible, but I wasn't about to let Liam be the one to do it. Trucks didn't just flip over on their side for no reason. Either there was another car and driver we couldn't see, or the yelling and the accident were connected. Liam and I were still standing out in the open when the figures in black came pouring out of the trees opposite us. Every inch of them was covered in black, from the ski masks pulled down over their faces to their black shoes. There was an entire highway between us, and still the sight of them was enough to make me reach out and grab Liam's arm, squeezing it until I was sure he'd be left with a permanent imprint of my fingers. There were at least 2 dozen figures in black. They moved in unison with practiced ease. And it was so weird, but watching them flood the road and divide into 2 groups, one that went to the front of the truck, the other to the back where its boxed contents were spilling out, reminded me of a football team running a play. The 4 of them sent to the front cab climbed up and ripped the door open. The driver, who was screaming something in a language I didn't understand, was hauled down to the ground. One of the figures in black, a big one, with shoulders the size of Kansas, pulled a knife from his belt and, signaling for the others to hold the driver down, pressed its silver blade against the man's palm. I heard a scream and didn't realize it had belonged to me until that same black monster's head swiveled toward us. Liam jumped at the 10 gun barrels that swung our way. The first bullet was close enough to nick his ear as it whistled by. There wasn't even time to turn and run. The firing stopped long enough for three of the figures to rush forward, screaming, "On your knees!" and "Head to the ground!" I wanted to run. Liam must have sensed this, because he latched onto my shoulder and forced me down, pressing the side of my face against the cold, rough asphalt. The rain picked up, filling my ear, my nose, my mouth, as I tried to bite back another scream. "We're not armed!" I heard Liam shout. "Easy! Easy! Save it, asshole!" someone hissed. I was intimately familiar with what it felt like to have a barrel of a gun dig into my skin. Whoever was doing it this time had no qualms about dropping a knee onto my back, along with their entire weight. The gun's metal mouth was cold against my cheek, and I felt someone weave a hand in my hair and give a sharp twist. That's when I disconnected from the pain and lifted a hand, trying to twist my body enough to grab whoever was holding me. I was not powerless. We were not going to die here. "Not those," I heard Liam say. He was begging. "Please." "Aw, don't want your precious papers to get wet?" The same voice as before. "How about you try being worried about yourself or your girl here, huh? Huh?" He sounded like a jock amped up on too much juice and game adrenaline. Someone stomped their foot down on the same hand I was trying to maneuver toward my attacker's skin. I let out a choked cry, wishing I could turn my head to see what was causing Liam to do the same. "Dr. Charles Merriweather," the voice read out, 2775 Arlington Court, Alexandria, Virginia. George Fields. The letters. "Stop it," Liam said. "We didn't do anything. We didn't see anything. Just..." "Charles Merriweather?" another voice said. Also male, this one with a heavier southern accent. I almost didn't hear him over the rain. "George Fields. Like Jack Fields?" "Yes." Liam made the connection a full second before I did. This was a tribe. These were kids. "Yes, we're Psi. Please, we're Psi like you." "Lee? Liam Stewart?" There was a shuffle of feet running toward us. "Mike, that you?" That from Liam. "Oh my God! Stop! Stop!" The gun lifted off my face, but I was still pinned to the ground. "I know him! That's Liam Stewart! Stop! Hayes, get off of him!" "He saw. You know the rules. Jesus, are you deaf?" Mike yelled. "The rules apply to adults. They're kids, you asshole." I don't know if Liam finally managed to throw him off or if Mike's words did the trick, but I felt Liam rise next to me and opened my eyes in time to see Liam drive his shoulder into the black figure on top of me. I gulped in a full chest of air. "Are you all right?" he asked. He put his hands on either side of my face. "Ruby, look at me. You okay?" My hands came up to grab his. I nodded. Of the six guys gathered around us, only two pulled their knit ski caps up off their faces. The big kid. Big in a Hercules kind of way, with ruddy skin and black paint under both eyes, and another one with olive coloring, shaggy brown hair pulled back into a short ponytail. The latter was Mike. He reached over and pulled the letters out of Hercules' hand and pressed them against his own chest.
"Lee, man! I'm so sorry. I never thought..."
Mike choked up. Liam let go of one of my hands to clap him on the back.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
Liam took the letters back from him and reached back to draw me forward again. "We're okay now," he told me. It seemed to be true enough. The other kids in black had lost interest in us the minute Mike stepped up.
"God, Lee," he said, wiping the rain off his face. "Oh, my God, I can't believe you actually made it out."
Liam's voice was tight. "I thought you were with Josh when..."
"I was, but I got through the fields," he added, "thanks to you."
Another kid, this one with skin as dark as Chubb's, jerked his thumb in Liam's direction.
"This is Lee Stewart," he demanded, "from Caledonia."
"From North Carolina," Liam said with surprising venom. Mike gripped Liam's hand, his entire body shaking.
"The others. Did you see if any of the others made it out?"
Liam hesitated. I knew what he was thinking, and I wondered if he would tell Mike the truth about how many kids actually escaped that night. Instead, their watches went off at once, a shrill beep.
"That's time," Hercules said to the others. "Grab the supplies and head back. The uniforms will be here any second."
A single gunshot punctuated his order like an exclamation point, thundering across the open road. Liam and I both jumped back, away from them. The kids at the back of the truck were tossing down the entirety of the truck's load, boxes and crates of brightly colored fruit. My lips parted at the sight of green bananas, just a few days shy of being ripe. When they moved off and started back toward the trees, I had a clear view of the truck driver being rolled, unconscious and bound, into the ditch alongside the road.
"So you're what?"
Liam rubbed the back of his neck. "Raiding anyone stupid enough to drive by?"
"It's a supply hit," Mike said. "We're just trying to bring in a little food to eat, and this is the only way that works for us. We just have to do it fast, in and out, before anyone notices us and can follow us back home."
"Back home?"
"Yeah. Where are you guys headed?"
Mike had to shout over the people shouting for him.
"You should come with us."
"We already have our own tribe. Thanks," Liam said. Mike's dark brows furrowed.
"We're not a tribe. Not like that, at least. We're with the Slip Kid. You heard of him?"
21. East River was, after all that speculating, nothing more than a camping ground. A big one, of course, but nothing I hadn't seen before a dozen times over with my parents. After the build-up that Mike and the others had given it, you would have thought we were walking toward Heaven's Pearly Gates, not some old camping spot that had been called Chesapeake Trails in its past life. Since Mike had been the one to convince the others to take us along, he was the one stuck babysitting us as we hiked up the muddy, unpaved road, saddled with boxes of fruit that were as heavy as they were tempting.
"We go on these things, we call them hits, to gather up supplies for the camp. Stuff like food, medicine, you name it. We also raid stores from time to time."
Liam had given me his jacket to wear to ward off the rain. Though it had turned to a faint drizzle as we walked, the damage had already been done to the flimsy cardboard boxes in our arms. Every now and then, the bottom of a carton would give out completely, and whatever kid was carrying it would be forced to stuff the sodden piles of fruit into their pockets or carry them cupped in their shirts. Kids were doubling back to pick up the scattered, bright trail we were leaving behind us. Every once in a while, I would catch myself from being distracted by the bright trail we were leaving behind. When Mike had his back turned to us, Liam snuck a hand in the top box and held an orange out in front of my face, a shy smile on his lips. When he dropped it in my jacket's pocket, he leaned over, his sweatshirt hood slipping off his head, and pressed a light kiss against my bruised cheek. After that, the cold trickle on my skin seemed to evaporate.
"Ow! Ow! Ow! Ow!" Chubbs chanted behind us. "Ow! Ow! Ow! Ow!"
"You know," Mike said, "it gives me hope that, after everything he's been through, Chubbs is still the same Chubbs we all know and love."
"Aw, that's not true," Liam said.
"This is Chubbs 2.0. He hasn't cried once this entire walk."
"Give him a few minutes," Mike snorted. "I'm sure he won't let us down."
"Hey," I said in a low, warning tone, "not funny."
Chubbs was still trailing behind, the gap between us growing with each mile marker we passed. I stopped and waited for him, not wanting him to feel like he was being left behind.
"Need some help?" I asked as he limped up to me. "My box isn't too heavy." And his was, I could tell. He was saddled with grapefruit. I could see in his eyes that he desperately wanted to trade, even if it was only for a few minutes. Instead, he lifted his chin and said over the cardboard flap,
"I'm fine, though I appreciate your asking."
Liam and Mike burst out laughing about something. Even Zoo looked back to grin at them, Liam's hat falling over her eyes. It was amazing how much better Liam looked after only a few hours. His face was animated with a kind of energy I hadn't seen. Well, ever.
What was he like?
I asked quietly, when he was in camp. Chubbs blew out a long sigh.
Well, for one thing, he was a lot more annoying with his whole, "We're gonna make it, guys, we're gonna get out one day," Pollyanna shtick. That's been dying a slow death now that he's realized just how sucky everything actually is.
He stopped to shift the box in his arms.
I mean, what do you want me to tell you? Lee is Lee. Everyone loved him, even some of the PSFs. They picked him out of all the blues to be a runner for the control center of our camp.
Yeah? And what were you like in camp?
I asked, smiling. Ignored, for the most part, he said. Unless I was with Lee.
As if he'd heard his name, Liam turned. Hurry up, ladies. We're going to be left behind. Mike was in the middle of explaining how he had hitchhiked from Ohio to Virginia after breaking out of Caledonia when Chubbs and I finally caught up to them. Zoo tugged the sleeve of my jacket and pointed through the trees to our left. I had been so involved in my conversation with Chubbs that I had completely missed the silky blue lake that had suddenly come into view. The clouds pulled back, revealing the sun high overhead. The water sparkled under its touch, throwing its light around the trees that lined its every side. Through them, I could see a small T-shaped wood dock at the other end, and beyond that, several wooden cabins.
So it's more of a place to hide, then, Liam was saying. Can he help us get in touch with our folks?
Mike frowned.
I guess, but he usually asks that you stay and help with the camp for a few weeks in return. Plus, why would you want to go home now? It's much safer here.
I could tell Chubbs wanted to press this issue, but Liam charged on with yet another question. How long has the slip guy had this set up?
2 or so years, I think, Mike answered. Man, I can't wait until you meet him. You are going to lose your mind.
Chubbs rolled his eyes heavenward, and I got the distinct impression that he and Mike were not all that fond of each other. And there are hundreds of kids here, just roaming around unchecked? I asked. How has he been able to stay here so long without the PSFs catching on? Mike had already explained how the camp worked. All of the kids who had gathered there, some who had escaped from camps or capture, others that had been able to hide out long enough to avoid it altogether, had responsibilities.
Oh, see, now that's the beauty of being under the slip kid's protection, Mike said. The PSFs can't attack him because of who he is and what he could do to them. Even old Gray is terrified of him.
I know who it is, Liam snapped his fingers. Santa.
Zoo giggled.
You're not too far off, Mike said. This is going to sound super sappy, so feel free to give me shit for it. But every day here feels like Christmas.
I saw what he meant right away. Once we reached the clearing that, I assumed, had once been used for campers to set up tents, we were surrounded by dozens of kids. To our right, teens were playing volleyball, with an actual net. I heard a few shrieks of laughter and stopped to let a few little girls rush by in front of me. They were the ones that caught Zoo's attention. They all looked happy, up and shiny and smiley, and clean. Not covered in cuts and bruises and mud like we were, but in decent clothes and shoes. A few kids lounging under the trees stopped whatever it was they were doing and actually helped us carry the fruit boxes toward a white building marked office/camp shop without being asked or prompted. The office/camp shop was the sturdiest of the structures we had passed so far, built in a more permanent style than the smaller log cabins with their dark green doors.
This is where we keep the food, Mike said, like it was the most exciting thing we were ever going to hear, and where the slip kid runs the whole show. I'll bring you guys in for an introduction. Get permission for you to stay a while.
We need permission? Chubbs asked. What happens if he says no?
He's never said no before, Mike said, shifting the box onto his shoulder so he could drop an arm around Chubbs' shoulder.
Seeing he had my attention, he grinned ear to ear.
Now, you couldn't have been at Caledonia.
I would remember a face like yours.
I think he thought he was being charming with those dark eyes and dimples. He looked over at Lee, who was fighting back a smile as he watched my reaction.
Where did she come from, and where can I find one?
Pick this one up at a gas station in West Virginia. Bargain price, Lee said. Last one on the shelf. Sorry.
Mike laughed again, giving Chubb's shoulder a squeeze before he hopped up the steps, ducking under a white sheet that had been strung up over the building's small porch. I glanced at it, then had to look again. The enormous black psi symbol painted there had stopped Zoo dead in her tracks and turned her face a sickly shade. I couldn't move, couldn't look away from it. Liam cleared his throat, his jaw working as if trying to shake the words loose. It was enough to stop Zoo and me dead in our tracks, at least. Alarm lit up her face like a candle. Liam gave his friend a confused look.
What?
Mike asked, seeing our reactions.
Any reason in particular you've decorated this fine establishment with our mortal enemy's symbol?
Liam said. It was the first time I had seen Mike's expression drop the entire time we'd been with him, which was close to 2 hours. Something hardened in his eyes, something strained the muscles in his jaw.
That's our symbol, isn't it?
It's Psi. It should represent us, not them.
How do you explain the black, then?
Liam pressed. The armbands, the shirts. He was right. Everyone, in some form or another, had the color on them. Most were apparently satisfied with tying a black band around their arm, but others, and not just the ones that had hit the truck for supplies, were in head-to-toe black.
Black is the absence of all colors, Mike said. We don't segregate by color here. We all respect one another and our abilities, and we all help one another understand them. I thought if anyone would be on board with that, it'd be you, Lee.
Oh, no. No, I am on board. I am, like, captain of that ship, Liam said. I was just confused, that's all. Black is the color. Got it.
The screen door creaked open again. Mike caught it with his foot.
Coming?
Inside, I was surprised to feel a wave of heat hit my face and see the overhead lights on. Electricity. I remembered Greg mentioning something about the yellows rigging the system to work, but did they have running water, too? The front rooms were filled with piles of blankets and bedding, a few stacked mattresses, and a number of unidentifiable gray plastic tubs. The back room, the shop and the office-slash-camp-shop combo, was to the right of a small, white-tiled kitchen. Mike waved to the kids inside, who were turning whatever delicious creation was inside of their pots with long wooden spoons. The old store's wood shelves were painted a dour green, but stuffed with a rainbow assortment of canned food and bags of chips, pasta, and even marshmallows. Liam let out a low whistle at the sight of the boxes of cereal stacked high over our heads. I thought Chubbs might cry. We left the fruit on the floor in a shady corner of the room, near a girl with cropped blonde hair and a midriff-bearing black shirt. She was still clapping her hands in delight, bouncing on her toes. She couldn't have been more than 14 or 15, and seemed to have as many piercings in the cartilage of each ear.
I knew you'd be happy, Lizzie, Mike said, tossing her a grapefruit.
We haven't had fruit in ages, she said, her pitch rising with every word. I hope this all keeps for a few weeks.
Mike led us out of the room, leaving Lizzie to coo over the pineapples and oranges.
Let's go upstairs. He should be done meeting with the security team by now. Hayes handles hits, but Olivia, you'll meet her, coordinates watch duty around the perimeter of the camp. If you want, I can talk to her about getting you assigned there.
He looked down at Zoo.
But unfortunately for you, my dear, everyone under 13 has to sit through lessons.
That caught Chubb's attention.
What kinds of lessons?
School stuff, I guess. Math, a little science, some reading. Depends on whatever books we were able to scrounge. It's important to the boss that everyone gets the basics down.
Mike stopped at the top of the stairs and looked over his shoulder.
I know you never liked using them, but there are lessons on how to use your abilities, too.
Chubbs cleared his throat behind me.
I'm
fine with what Jack taught me.
Jack.
Mike's voice trailed off.
Man, I miss that kid.
On our walk over, he had explained that there were 5 kids from Caledonia living in the Slip Kids' camp. Mike was the only one from Liam's old room, but there were 2 blue girls, 1 yellow boy, and a green who had somehow made it all the way to Eastern Virginia. The second story of the building was more of an attic. The entire floor was 1 open room, but it was a nice one. Mike knocked on the door, waiting for the come in, before daring to twist the handle. I heard Chubbs let out a nervous squeak, and I was surprised to feel my own heart skip a beat. The door opened to the middle of the room. To the right was a white curtain, drawn all the way over to hide what I thought was probably the living area. The window behind the curtain let in enough afternoon light to hint at the shape of a bed and dresser. The other half of the room was set up like an office. There were 2 bookshelves filled with binders and books of every shape and size. An old metal desk with peeling black paint sat in between. There were 2 simple chairs in front of the desk, and a long table pushed to the far left wall, with all sorts of electronic equipment. A TV was on, set to one of the news channels. President Gray's face filled the screen, flanked by 2 American flags. His mouth moved, but the TV had been muted. The only sound, aside from Chubb's sharp intake of breath, was Clancy Gray's fingers striking the keys of the sleek, silver laptop. I would have recognized him even if he had shaved his head of thick, wavy black hair, if he had tattooed his cheeks or pierced his long, straight nose. I had spent 6 years staring up at every single one of his portraits at Thurmond, memorizing every mole, the shape of his thin lips. I was even intimately familiar with the peak of his hairline. But it was nothing like seeing the real thing. Those portraits hadn't captured his dark eyes, and they certainly hadn't been able to predict how striking he'd turn out to be as he aged.
Just a sec.
He glanced up from his screen in our direction and immediately did a double take.
Boss, Mike said, you okay?
The president's son rose slowly, shutting the lid of his laptop. The rolled-up sleeves of his white shirt slid down his tan arms.
This is the Slip Kid? I thought.
Him. Surprise was an understatement. Brain-numbing shock, the kind that reduced my train of thought to an inching crawl, was an understatement. I didn't even have a second to collect myself before the next 3 words passed his lips. There was no way I could have, because Clancy Gray looked straight at me and said the very last thing on earth I expected.
Ruby Elizabeth Daly.
My reaction was way too strong for something as innocent as my full name. It wasn't like he had spat out 3 vile cuss words or screamed, kill them now, or lock them up. I shouldn't have stumbled back, tripping over my own boots, but I was nearly to the door before I even realized it. Clancy took a step forward, but Liam pushed him back hard.
Lee!
Mike sounded scandalized. Clancy held up his hands.
Sorry, I'm sorry, my bad. I should have realized how that would sound. I was just surprised to see you.
He leaned around Liam with an apologetic smile, and I paused at the door, momentarily stunned by how white and straight his teeth were.
I've read your file so many times on so many different networks that I feel like we've already met. There are so many people out there looking for you right now.
And which one do you plan on turning her over to? Chubb snapped.
I stood still, letting Zoo keep one arm wrapped around my waist. Clancy's face flushed at the accusation, his dark eyes flicking back over me.
None of them? I just collect information, watch the networks to see what everyone is buzzing about. And that just happens to be you, Miss Daly.
He paused, rubbing a hand absently over his shoulder.
Let's see if I remember all of this. Born in Charlottesville, Virginia, but raised in Salem by her mother, Susan, a teacher, and her father, Jacob, a police officer. Attended Salem Elementary School until your 10th birthday, when your father called into his station to report an unknown child in his house.
Stop, I muttered. Liam looked over his shoulder, trying to divide his attention between me and the boy reciting the sordid tale of my life. But, bad luck, the PSFs beat the police to your house. Good luck, someone dropped the ball, or they had other kiddies to pick up, because they didn't wait around long enough to question your parents, and, thus, didn't pre-sort you. And then you came to Thurmond, and you managed to avoid their detecting you were orange.
Stop! I didn't want to hear this. I didn't want anyone to hear it.
What's the matter with you? Liam shouted. Can't you see you're upsetting her? Clancy, maybe anticipating another hard shove, moved to the other side of his desk.
I'm excited to meet her, that's all. It's not often that you find another orange.
A spark lit at the center of my chest, spreading quickly up to my brain. He is an orange. The rumors were right. He might actually be able to help me.
But weren't you reformed? I asked slowly. Isn't that why they let you out?
You, of all people, should know they can't reform shit at Thurmond, Ruby, he said. How is good old Thurmond, by the way? I had the dubious honor of being its first inmate. Got to see them build the mess hall brick by brick. Did they really hang my picture up everywhere?
A better question. Did he really think I was going to pull up a chair and shoot the breeze about the good old days?
Clancy sighed. Anyway, if you're Ruby, then you must be Lee Stewart. I've read your file, too.
Anything good in there? Mike asked with a nervous laugh.
The PSFs have been following your every move, Clancy said, leaning back in his chair, which means you need some place to lie low for a while, right?
Liam hesitated a split second before nodding.
You made a good choice coming here. You can stay as long as you need.
Clancy rested his hands on his chest.
Now that I've managed to upset everyone, Mike, do you want to take them to a cabin and get them set up in the rotations?
Mike nodded.
For the record, you didn't upset me, boss.
Clancy laughed, rich and slow. Okay, good. Thanks for all of your hard work today, by the way. Sounds like it was a good haul.
Like you wouldn't believe, Mike said, moving toward the door.
He waved us after him, but he no longer looked at us with the same warmth.
Cabin 18 is open, right?
Yeah, Ty and his guys went tribal on us, Clancy said. I don't know that anyone has gone in to clean it since they left, though, so I apologize if it's a mess.
And then he was staring at me again, one corner of his lips turning up, then the other. A warm, fizzling sensation filled my head, sending my pulse spiking. I turned away and broke eye contact, but the image still flooded my mind, spilling in until I thought I might choke. In my mind's eye, I saw Clancy and me alone in the room. Him on one knee, offering a rose in my direction.
Forgive me.
His voice was loud in my ears, echoing as I stumbled down the stairs.
How had he done that? Waltzed right through every single one of my natural defenses.
And why was my brain suddenly alive and reaching out for whoever was closest, whoever was stupid enough to let me in? I lifted my face from where I had buried it against Liam's shoulder. When had I done that? When had we gotten outside? When had we walked all the way to the cabin? Liam's eyes tried to catch mine as I pulled away. My head ached, physically ached, for him. It was too dangerous to stand so close to him.
Not right now, I whispered.
Liam's brows drew together, and his lips parted with something he wanted to say. After a moment, he only nodded and turned back toward the cabin, bounding up the steps. I needed to get as far away from them as I could, at least until the trilling inside of my head died down. There was no plan or map involved. I just set off down a nearby path. A few kids, all strangers, called after me in concern, but I ignored them, following the smell of mud and molding leaves until I found the lake we had passed. The trees and brush had overgrown the path down to the T-shaped wooden dock, and where there weren't plants in my way, there was a rope, along with a sign that warned, "Do not enter." I slipped under it, and kept heading down, not stopping until I sat on the edge of the old sun-bleached dock and put my head between my knees, listening to the sounds of kids laughing and yelling in the distance, wondering when the feeling would return to my legs long enough for me to stand, and when the imprint of Clancy Gray's voice would fade. Alone, I thought, lying down on the old wood. Finally, alone. Dinner was served at exactly 7 that night. There was no intercom or alarm system in the camp, but there were cowbells. Apparently, that was a universal call for food, because once the first bell rang, others echoed back, spreading the noise through the cabins and trails, all the way down to where I sat studying my reflection in the dark water. It was easy enough to find the action. 200-odd kids gathered around a raging bonfire to eat wasn't exactly subtle. My feet slowed the closer I came, watching as a few of the older boys threw more logs into the fire's grasping fingers. Rings of old logs provided makeshift seats for those who already had their food and didn't want to eat alone in their cabins. The kids we had seen in the kitchen had set up a table full of what looked like slow cookers and were making runs between the office building and the fire to replenish them. Dozens of kids waited in line for their turn at the pots, their plastic bowls pressed against their chests in anticipation. I spotted Liam straight off, standing, rather than sitting, on one of the logs. He had a bowl of chili in each hand and was scanning the area. Chubbs would have walked right by him if Liam hadn't nudged him as he passed. He asked Chubbs something, but I caught only part of his response.
No thanks. I read Lord of the Flies. I know how this works. Everyone starts dancing around the fire and painting their faces and worshiping a decapitated pig head, and then someone gets hit by a boulder and plummets to their death. And, surprise, it's the fat kid in glasses.
Liam started laughing, but even I could see how uncomfortable Chubbs looked.
I think I'm going to play it safe and go read. And, hey, there's Ruby. You two can enjoy the degeneration of human decency without me.
Liam whirled around so fast his footing slipped, and he came dangerously close to dropping both bowls on the bushy-haired girl sitting beside him.
Have fun, Chubb said as he hurried past me.
I caught his sleeve and swung him back around. What's wrong? I asked. He shrugged, a sad smile curling the ends of his lips.
I'm just not up for it tonight, I guess. I knew the feeling.
After it being just the four of us alone for so long, suddenly being around so many people, even if they were kids like us, was a little stressful. If he hadn't liked it when one new person, me, had invaded his world, I could only imagine what this was doing to his nerves. Well, if you change your mind, we'll be here. Chubbs patted my head fondly and continued up the dirt trail back to our assigned cabin.
What's gotten into him?
Liam asked, offering me the steaming bowl of food.
I think he's just tired, I said, and left it at that.
Where's Zoo? He nodded to the left, where, sure enough, Zoo's smiling face appeared at the center of a small group of boys and girls her age. When she saw me, she waved. I wondered how it was possible for her face to be so vibrant. The Asian girl sitting next to her nodded as Zoo gestured to her, as if knowing her every thought without her having to whisper a word. When Zoo reached over to knock back the hood of the girl's Virginia is for Lovers sweatshirt, she revealed a long, glossy black braid.
Oh my God, I said, making the connection instantly.
What's wrong?
That kid was in your camp, I said. I saw her in Zoo's nightmare. They got separated?
Really?
The dawning realization that spread across his face was adorable.
Guess that explains why they tackled one another to the ground earlier.
I laughed.
They did?
Yeah, they were rolling around like puppies in the grass.
Hey, Zoo!
She looked our way again. Come here a sec. No, bring your friend. When the two girls were on their feet, I was surprised to see the other girl stood a good 4 inches above Zoo's head, though she looked like she couldn't have been more than a year older than her. Zoo took the girl's hand and flounced over to us, grinning. She was back to wearing the hot pink dress.
Hi there. Liam said, holding out his hand to the girl. My name is Liam, and this is...
I know who you are,
the girl interrupted.
Liam and Ruby.
She crossed her arms over her chest.
Suzume told me all about you.
told you, or, of course she didn't tell me, the girl huffed, earning a sharp elbow to her side. She turned and said something to Zoo in Japanese, who, in turn, shook her head and reached up to tug the girl's braid.
Okay, fine.
The tall girl turned back to us, flanked by the campfire.
I'm Hina. Suzume is my cousin.
Oh, wow, I said, looking to Zoo. Are you serious? That's amazing. She was bouncing on her toes, still smiling.
And you were at Caledonia together, Liam said slowly.
Zoo, why didn't you mention it? We could have tried to track her down.
Are you a yellow, too?
I'm a green, Hina said, pointing to her full head of hair.
Duh. Zoo gave us an apologetic shrug before tugging Hina away, back to the circle of younger kids who were engrossed in some kind of card game. Liam turned toward me with a look of pure amazement.
Did I just get sassed by a 12-year-old?
I guess it runs in the family, I said, spinning my spoon around my bowl. The chili was warm, with a wonderful kick. I don't think I'd eaten anything other than the slop they'd served at Thurman and junk food in almost 7 years. And the fact that someone had put even the barest amount of effort into it? I had to go back and get seconds, thirds, until I physically could not stuff myself anymore.
Being so close to the fire with a belly full of delicious food was making me feel drowsy and safe. I slid down off the log so I was sitting on the ground, reclining against Liam's legs.
That reminds me, Liam said. Would you believe Zoo actually started jumping up and down and clapping when I told her she had to get up at 7 to go do some good old-fashioned book learning with the other cubbies?
Cubbies?
Daily lessons. School. He tapped my nose with the clean end of his spoon. Stick around, Ruby Tuesday, and you'll start picking up the cool kid lingo, too. When we finished eating, Liam set both of our bowls in one of the many plastic tubs floating by. The blue, controlling the one closest to us, was a skinny kid who looked like he weighed about half of what his tub did. I blinked once, twice, wondering if I was imagining it. It was the first time I had ever seen kids use their abilities so frivolously. It was a strange contrast to what was otherwise a picture of normalcy. At least what I assumed normalcy looked like. A few kids strummed on guitars or used their log as a drum set. Most were talking quietly or playing card games. Liam slid down behind me, finding just enough room between my back and the old log. The shimmering air around the flames, combined with a delicious heat, made my muscles turn to mush. His hand came up to brush the stray strands of hair off the back of my neck. I leaned back until I was resting against his chest, nestled between his knees. "You okay now, darling?" he whispered in my ear. I nodded, my fingers finding the bare skin of his forearms, tracing the muscles and overlying veins there, on a discovery mission, searching for something I hadn't even realized I wanted until now. His skin was so soft, his hands warm and wide, knuckles bruised and torn with brittle scabs. I pressed my own hand on top of his, weaving our fingers together. I had to be alone for a little while, but I'm okay now.
All right, he whispered, but next time, don't go where I can't find you.
I didn't doze off so much as relax. It seemed like the longer I sat there, the quieter my head became, the more the aches and knots in my body worked themselves out, leaving me as soft as the dirt under us. Eventually, someone brought out a decades-old boombox, and even the kids with guitars stopped playing in deference to the Beach Boys. I seemed to be the only one in the entire camp who didn't dance, but it was fun to watch the others. Zoo, in particular, as she twisted her hips and threw her arms in the air, at least until she ran up to us and began to tug on our arms. I managed to beg off, but Liam didn't have nearly as much willpower. They were both laughing when the track switched to Barbara Ann, twirling when Fun, Fun, Fun came on. I should have known something was up when they both turned to me wearing identical devious looks. Liam held up a finger in my direction, beckoning me over to him. I laughed and shook my hands in front of me. No! He grinned, his first real grin in days, and I felt something tug at my belly button. The sensation was warm, tingling, and
familiar. Liam pretended he was hauling a line in, and Zu actually stopped her frolicking to act it out with him. Their faces were flushed and glowing with a sheen of sweat. With nothing but fine dust and mud between us, I slid right over to them, right into Liam's outstretched hands.
"No fair," I whined.
"Come on, Green," he said. "You could use a good dance."
Zu spun us around, waving her arms in time to "Wouldn't it be nice?" I put my hand over Liam's, letting him drop it over one of his shoulders. He took my other hand without asking and held it lightly in his own.
"Step up on my feet."
I gave him what I hoped was an incredulous look.
"Trust me," he said. "Come on, before our song is over."
Against all my better judgment, I put my feet over his, waiting for him to wince at my weight. At least his bones felt sturdy under mine.
"A little closer, Green. I won't bite."
I leaned forward, close enough that my cheek was resting against his shoulder. Liam's hand tightened around mine, and I found my other hand bunching the fabric of his shirt. And I was embarrassed, because I was positive he could feel my heart hammering in my chest.
"No spinning," I said.
I wasn't sure if my head or heart could take it. Up close, he was so warm and so beautiful. I was already dizzy enough.
"No spinning," he agreed.
When we began to move, it wasn't really dancing, just some glorified swaying, back and forth, nice and easy. For once, my brain was perfectly content to keep its hands to itself. My muscles moved slow, like honey. We were completely out of sync with the song, and then we weren't even moving at all. My cheek rested on his shoulder. The hand on the small of my back slipped under my shirt and curled against the skin there. When the bells rang again, this time signaling lights out across the camp, there was an audible groan, loud enough to get Liam chuckling. I didn't realize how tired I was until we separated.
"Bedtime," he called, waving Zu over.
She stood, brushing herself off, signaling something to the group of kids she was leaving. The fire popped and hissed, buckling under a steady stream of water from a nearby hose. The sound it made was like an animal having the life squeezed out of it. And when the light was finally gone, settling down into a pile of unimpressive embers spread out among the ash, there was nothing but a screen of smoke to separate me from where Clancy Gray sat on the other side of the pit, watching me with dark eyes. 22. That was something Clancy Gray liked to do, apparently. Watch me. Watch me while I sat out on the porch helping Zu lace her new tennis shoes before walking with her and Hina to the cabin serving as the classroom. Watch me tease Chubbs for being the first and only one to get bitten by a tick. Watch me wait by the fire pit with Lee for Mike to arrive with what our duties would be during our time at East River. All this watching from the window on the second story of the office, where he appeared to control everything and do nothing. Mike had mentioned that everyone older than 13 would be responsible for doing some work. I just hadn't realized that the assignments were chosen for you. I didn't mind helping out in the pantry, organizing and counting our supplies, but I would have so preferred being out with Chubbs in the camp's small garden, or running around the forest with Liam on security detail. It was strange not to spend my entire day with them. The kids I worked with were nice enough. More than nice, actually. Most had never seen the inside of a camp, but then again, I had never cooked a meal, so it wasn't like any of us were winning in the life experience department. What I liked most was their brand of pluck. Lizzie, for instance, had been hiding out at East River for close to 2 years, having narrowly escaped capture by PSFs who had pulled her parents' car over in Maryland.
"You just got out and ran?" I asked.
"Like the wind," she confirmed. "Didn't have anything on me at all, except what I was wearing. I tried to meet up with my parents again, but they never went back to our old house. I got picked up by a tribe of Greens and brought here."
That was another thing. Most of the kids here were either Green or Blue, with a small, tight-knit group of Yellows that didn't really socialize outside of their own circle. Lizzie claimed that there used to be more, but the slip kid had given them permission to head out and form a tribe of their own.
"He gave them permission?" I repeated,
marking down how many boxes of cereal we had left.
Yeah, and there are other requirements, too.
That from Dylan, a small-boned kid who had only recently finished his Cubby's lessons. He claimed the nickname came from the wood shelving units Clancy had built to store all of their books and schoolwork.
You have to have at least a group of five, he continued, and then Clancy has to determine whether or not it's safe, and you have to swear on your life not to reveal anything about the camp, unless it's to another kid in need, and then you can only reveal the clue. It's to keep everyone safe. It would kill him if something happened to a kid because of him.
I felt myself soften a little then. It wasn't so much that I didn't trust Clancy's motivations. He just unnerved me. When someone takes such an interest in you, you have to wonder what it is exactly they're searching for in your face.
What are you doing?
All three of us looked over to the door, where Clancy stood stiff and still staring at me. The wind from the open door behind him tugged at his dark hair, causing it to stand on end. Something inside of me coiled at his expression, but it wasn't fear.
We're sorting? Lizzie said, confused. Is something wrong?
Clancy snapped out of whatever daze he had been stuck in.
Yeah, sorry. It's just... Ruby, would you mind coming with me for a second? I think there was some confusion on your assignment.
I passed my clipboard back to Lizzie, wondering why her eyes narrowed at me.
I was assigned to storage, I said when we were standing outside on the porch. I didn't assign you anything, he said. I specifically told Mike that.
I'd like to think that I wasn't the type of person to be easily intimidated by other kids, even the ones that were taller, stronger, or better armed than I was. So I'm not sure why it hit me then that I was talking to Clancy Gray, the son of the most powerful man in the country, a blue-blooded American prince who wore his black polo shirt with a collar popped under a matching cable-knit sweater. He was even wearing a leather belt. I crossed my arms over my chest. I'm more than capable of pulling my weight. Out in the sunlight, he was far less intimidating than he had been in the shade. And shorter. It was possible his reputation had added a few imaginary inches, but he was only a bit taller than I was, which meant both Liam and Chubb stood nearly a full head over him. Not that it did anything to knock his title of the most attractive person I had ever seen. Clancy was lean, but not slight, well-kept, but not groomed, composed, but not comfortable. I thought, as the wind blew against us, that he might have been wearing some spicy cologne, but that seemed ridiculous. I was glad we were out on the porch where everyone by the fire pit could see us. I didn't think he was going to hurt me or anything like that. Why would he? I felt my hands clasp together in front of me, then move to my side, then rise up to cup my elbows, like they couldn't figure out what they wanted to be doing. I hadn't forgotten my whole purpose in coming here, but I couldn't bring myself to ask for his help. He clearly had a good grasp on his own abilities if he was voluntarily diving into people's minds. The question should have come as naturally as breathing. If he had these kids following his every whim and order, it had to be because he was a good guy, right? People didn't help other people just for their health. Clancy had the kind of confidence that made him the sun at the center of East River's galaxy. Everything and everyone orbited around his light. So, why couldn't I bring myself to ask? Why were my hands still shaking?
I know you probably won't ever come around to liking me after our introduction, he said, but I am sorry. It didn't occur to me that you were keeping that information secret.
It's fine, I said. But what does that have to do with my work assignment? For a few moments, he didn't say anything at all. He just stared.
Will you stop? I muttered, feeling both flustered and annoyed at once.
If I say you're forgiven, will you stop doing that? His mouth turned up in a handsome grin.
No.
Clancy, who apparently had never been taught about respecting someone's personal space, took a step forward, and I took a step back, off the porch, my feet sinking into the sticky mud. Instead of backing off, he seemed to take it as a challenge and came toward me again. For whatever reason, mostly the flutter of nerves in my gut, I let him.
"Listen," he said finally, "the reason I told Mike not to assign you anything is because I'm hoping that you'll come work with me."
"Excuse me?"